In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Kane Collects. As always, download free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts, Amazon, Google, Apple. You know, appreciate all the support we've been getting, and I've been getting a lot of feedback on my thoughts on the National. You know, there's a lot that went on, so I can't wait to release this episode. And I usually don't bring back a guest this quickly or even have guests on twice, to be honest with you, but I felt like his point of view would be good as well. We share a similar taste and so how we work the floor and how we look at cards. So I'm bringing back on my man Brian Dennison, Cajun Cardboard, Cajun_cardboard and Instagram. He's also on Facebook and everything else on social media. Brian, thanks for joining me again.
Yeah, I'm not a guest anymore. I think now I'm officially a co-host.
We'll see.
I think I'm your apprentice is what I am. I'm like your minion, right? If you need you just say the word. I'm on, man.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I always appreciate you being available, man. That is, I know you love actually just, you know, talking cards and sports, and you love putting out content. The last time we spoke, you know, you were saying how you're just putting out so much content. You have a lot to say, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to talk about it, I may as well hit record and talk about it. You know
what
I mean?
Right.
I'm going to talk about it anyway. It doesn't matter. You know, that's what YouTube's for. Let's just chat, hit record and start talking.
All right. So, well, let's get into it real quick. The National Cleveland 2024. Mm-hmm. You're coming from Louisiana. We spoke before we started rolling here that you drove from Louisiana, which is quite the drive.
Yeah.
I'm in Detroit. Easy drive to Cleveland, 2.5 hours. So we both drove, though, coming from opposite directions. I came for Wednesday and Thursday, got out of there Friday. You stayed longer than me, so I'd love to get your perspective on Friday and Saturday and how that went down. But the talk, at least early on in Cleveland, was not good stuff. And we'll talk about it right off the bat here. And overall, I like the show. I'll go back. You know, I enjoy it. There's a lot of great stuff that you can do and find. But I want to talk about to get the bad out of the way first, which is logistically, it was pretty much kind of a shit show, let's be honest, to get in there for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was one of those people. So for those that have never been to the National before, usually Wednesday night is 4 to 8 p.m. It's like a preview night, 4 hours, kind of get in before the whole weekend starts and all that stuff. I like to go that night. I like to hit the floor quickly and see who's got what, you know. It was me and three other buddies. We kind of turned it into a guy trip now. This is our fourth or fifth year in a row. We get there and we end up getting to the convention center around 4 o'clock. And I know I'm not going to just get in and walk in like that. That's crazy. But you could tell traffic was building up before you even got to the IX Center. I don't know about you, Brian, and when you got there, but from my point of view, traffic was at a standstill and a crawl. It was two lanes. You finally got to divert to a lane, and it had one entrance for some weird reason. And then we were pushed to the east entrance is where the entrance is for the main the convention center. That got backed up at full. Well, they pushed us to the west entrance. We finally get through the west entrance. We pay our parking, and after parking, there's not one person you see working traffic or anything like that. It was like Mad Max. You're driving, and you find a spot, and everyone gets out of their car. I saw people while I was waiting in line, Brian. I don't know about you, but getting out of their Ubers, out of their Lyfts, out of their cars, and walking their cases and dollies to the convention center from the street, from the
Like not just like from the, you know, adjacent to the parking lot, like from hundreds of yards away.
Oh, and it was hot.
Yeah. They're like, it's a better idea for me to get out of this Uber and walk 7 football fields with a Zion case or rolling luggage than to wait in this crap. Yeah, man, I'm with you. I was worried, but you know what? It got better. It was frightening how bad the parking and traffic situation was to get in on a Wednesday, because, you know, Kang, you know, some people blow that day off completely.
Yeah.
So by no means is that 4 to 8 window on Wednesday, like, that's not peak hours, right?
No.
So Friday, Saturday is when all hell breaks loose. And so it scared the hell out of me, man. I was like, damn, if it's this bad on Wednesday, I got to make some changes for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so we finally got in. I don't know how long it took you. It took me about 35 minutes from, like, let's say 500 yards away.
Uh-huh.
I was 500 yards away, and it took me about 30 minutes to get in the lot. When I got up there, I realized they're taking $10 for parking from every single car.
Yes.
And I'm thinking to myself, listen, guys, that's why we're backed up, because you've got to go up and get a credit card, cash, what, you know, that, whatever you're doing, that's fine. You're not going to let me buy a weekly pass for parking. This is going to be a cluster tomorrow. And so, but they scrapped it. They didn't, I never saw them collect money again. Did you?
No, that was the thing. I come back Thursday, and I'll get to my Thursday real quick. I'm like, they didn't have us pay for parking? I mean, either they were like, you know what, we screwed the collectors, we screwed the pooch on Wednesday, or, you know, we don't have the manpower to just stop every car. We got to let these cars in.
I'll give them credit for that decision.
Me too. Like, you know how much money they lost, Brian, on that?
Yeah. I think that they thought to themselves, man, there can't be that many adult nerds out there who like sports cards. This is all overblown. We got this. This is going to be easy. And then Wednesday, they were like, oh, hell no, we got issues. So we got to make some changes. So it looks like they decided, let's waive the parking fee just to get these guys in here quicker.
Yep.
And so it got a little better. And then I found a little sneaky Cajun voodoo route around to the back through a state park, which sped things up. And so, but yeah, trying to get in there was something. But, and, you know, again, man, Kang, it's all about perspective, right? I think it's a great thing. You know, it's not great that logistics sucked, but it's a great thing that that many people wanted to be in that building in, you know, I'm 16 hours away. You're, you know, coming from Detroit. People are coming from California. People flying from all over the world. I just think it's a great sign, man. I think it's a great sign for the hobby that that many people wanted to go there. So
that, no, that's definitely a good half glass full type perspective. And I think in the overall, you know, the show was a positive, not a negative. I would say this was probably the biggest negative, but they tried to make up for it, which is great. You're right, Brian. The fact that they did not take money for parking the rest of the weekend that's a lot of money they turned down. A lot.
Give credit where credit's due. And you know, the issue, Kang, and the reason it kind of hit like a ton of bricks is this was the first impression. Like, we weren't even in the building to complain about the food lines or the bathroom or the Wi-Fi. This was the very first impression is, I can't even get in the damn building. You know?
Yeah.
So that's just bad timing.
Yeah, they definitely underestimated the nerds that are adults. Apparently, we're supposed to be adults here that really wanted to go see some pictures of guys on cards. You know what I mean? But so once we it took us about an hour, to be honest with you, when we finally got to the front door. Okay, so I got in there at 5 o'clock. I looked at my friends because we're gonna split up because we're all hyper focused on cards, and I'll get more into that in a little bit, but. We look at each other and go, all right, meet up front in 3 hours. We got 3 hours to do as much damage and check the floor as possible and see where the show and all the good cards are, bad cards, whatever. Once you park in the west entrance, though, for people that haven't been to Cleveland before, it's basically like another half quarter mile, it seems like, to walk around the building to get to the front, which was another weird thing, right?
Yes,
it was not like, good. Yeah, not good. So
yeah, I don't need to add a quarter mile onto my old ass knees before I even get to the floor where I'm going to walk for 4 hours. I don't need that, but it is what it is, you know.
And it was a harsher walk. It was like your concrete, like you said, and you know, people carrying stuff and luggage and whatever. So I felt for those people, but it is what it is. And you had a little bit of a bad taste before you even got in the floor. But once I got in, I felt the energy again. You're right. There's so many collectors that came. This is so big now. I feel like it's just going to get bigger and bigger every year. For all the people that say the hobby's dead, if you go to National, you wouldn't know it at all. I mean, you would just think this many people for not cards.
True. Yeah.
It's crazy, right? So
Kang, did you get a VIP pass or a 5-day early entry or just
a regular? I did one day passes, you know?
Yeah. So the one thing I'll say is it was ironic, right? Because VIP stands for very important person. Well, I was just a 5-day early entry because I don't care about the packs and I don't care about the autographs. And so I didn't pay the VIP premium. The VIPs had to wait in line another hour when they got there to get their VIP passes. I walked right to the window, grabbed my 5-day early entry and walked into the show. So it was kind of ironic that these people paid a premium to be VIPs, you know, which really means you get a bunch of fluff. And they had to wait an hour in line after waiting in the parking. So I think that really left a sour taste in the mouths of a lot of guys.
And you know, if you're paying for VIP, you're a super like hardcore collector. So you're really pissed off, you know, like
you're really pissed.
I was a little annoyed when I had to go and go get a wristband in another room and then go back to the front. Cause I went to the front, show my ticket, like, no, you gotta go get a wristband. I'm like, come on. He's like, I know, it'll take 5 minutes. And I'm not even sure they looked at my piece of paper, Brian. Honestly, they were probably just like, here's your wristband. Just take go on.
Yeah. There's like 700 people in line. Just take it. Get away from me.
Yep, exactly. But the Thursday, since we knew it was so bad, and I kept on social media to see how bad it was in the morning, I heard it was pretty rough in the morning as far as people trying to get there early. We actually waited. We ended up leaving our Airbnb, which is about 15 minutes away, got there about noon, no problem with traffic. Parking lot was pretty jam-packed, but we were able to just go in and try to find a spot. So it was a lot better Thursday. I felt Wednesday, they really took it on the chin, tried to change things. We, like I said earlier, we didn't pay for parking, went in and found a spot. So Thursday was a lot easier to get into.
Agreed.
So now let's talk about what happened inside real quick, all right? So you mentioned it a little bit earlier here. The Wi-Fi, the bathrooms, the food. I will say there was definitely more food options than there was in Chicago last year.
Way more.
They stepped that up for sure.
Yep.
A lot. But you know, then again, the bathrooms though. I got great bladder control, Brian. So thank goodness. So at one point I'm like, all right, I'm going to use the bathroom.
Yeah.
I looked over. I'm like, I'm not going to use the bathroom. Cause this line is, I'm like, this is the men's line. I asked somebody, wait, I'm like, yeah. What'd you think about the bathroom situation?
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. For whatever reason, I'm 50, you know, so I've got no bladder left, right? And whatever I drink just pours out of my shorts, you know, 50-year-old men can't do anything with that. But, so I didn't have any bathroom. I didn't have a need for a bathroom at the show on Thursday or Friday. Wednesday or Thursday for whatever reason. Well, Friday rolls around and I'm about to do an interview with Fanatics. And I was like, you know what? I got to pee, man. I've been here for three and a half hours. I was like, I got to find a bathroom. So I go and I look. As far as I know, there are two bathroom options total, maybe. And both lines had about 70 people in line. Like, I couldn't even see the bathroom. The line was so long.
Yeah.
And so I went to Fanatics and I asked one of my guys. I was like, guys, please tell me there's some secret option for vendors to use, you know, some secret bathroom for you guys who would get to set up your booth on carpet and all that stuff. He's like, don't tell anybody, but go walk through those curtains. They're not checking people. You can walk to a bathroom in the back. There was a secret bathroom that I walked into. There's no one there. I walked in. There's empty stalls. The urinals are empty. Nobody knew about it. It was amazing. It was behind the show, like towards where we parked in the back.
Uh-huh.
Secret bathroom. Nobody knew about. So I knocked it out.
Was that for vendors?
They let me walk in. I'm not a vendor. I'm not set up. I'm definitely not a corporate vendor. I just have my regular old badge on. Then I just walk right through. And they didn't stop me.
Because,
so I was like, you know.
Yeah, that would make sense to let them have at least a separate bathroom so they get back to their, you know, their booths. But so I didn't go Wednesday because that whole situation. Thursday, we happened to be in the back area by where the auction places were, I think it was. And there's a bathroom downstairs. Did you see the stairs?
Yes, in a tunnel thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
there, it was actually no line. So I went down there and it was okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay, that was, cool. Yeah. So at that, maybe I just got lucky with the moment. Maybe people would just said, screw it. You know what I mean? So the bathroom situation. Food options, though, there was a great big area for people to sit down and eat, but really people were making deals, trade. You know, they're having their own trade day or whatever, so that was fine.
Yeah.
I didn't get any food, but the lines looked like they were long in certain food truck areas. I just think depending on which one you go to. But I did appreciate they had more options in a big area. They had a bar in the middle for people that wanted to drink, you know, that they're serving alcohol for those people. Wi-Fi. I had a terrible time using my own data. So the vendors told me, hey, get on the Wi-Fi here. You'll have a much better time. And I did actually, but it was in and out every now and then. What about you?
I'm a tech idiot. And so I always use my data thingy, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't get on the Wi-Fi. And I talked to, I think, Justin at 610 Sports Cards. And I was like, dude, I can't comp anything. This is impossible. I'm not going to be able to buy any cards. I can't get on Card Ladder. I can't check any comps or anything. He said, turn your phone off, then turn it back on and get on the Wi-Fi. It's free. And it was better, but it wasn't great. Okay. Like I could, you know, do what I needed to do as far as the cards go, but I was up there to do a lot of the content for my YouTube channel. And so I couldn't upload my shorts as I was doing stuff.
Yeah.
I could record it, you know, on my phone, whatever, but I couldn't upload it. Wasn't uploading. So I had to do all that stuff in the evenings at the show. It wasn't great. I mean, listen, the list is short, but it was bad. Bathrooms, food lines, Wi-Fi parking. That's the only bad things I have to say about the show. And to be honest with you, Kang, I'm not real hard to please. I'm there for the cards, for the people, for the experience. I don't care, man. I'll endure whatever. If I'm going to drive 15 hours, I'm not going to let a bunch of parking and Wi-Fi be a problem. So I'm going to have a fun time regardless. So that's it. That's my short list of issues.
Also, I think that's honestly, that's mine too. And I'm not trying to dwell on it, to be honest with you, because we got a lot of good stuff we want to talk about. I'll get to it. I just kind of want to get this out of the way. But you're right. I mean, I'm there. I'm so hyper focused on looking at cards and seeing cards in person, touching them, handling them, trying to acquire them, things like that. That, you know, this stuff did not get in the way of my week. You know, I had a great time with my boys. I had a great time at the show. There's just things that I think you got a voice because so they know this new committee that's taken over knows, hey, what do we got to improve on? I think you're always trying to get better. No matter what you do in life, I think you should always try to be getting better. And I hope that they try to make this a better experience for everybody at the National. Because
here's the deal, Kang. The parking situation, you know, what's the difference between do you go to Chicago?
Yeah.
Do you go to Chicago? What's the difference between Chicago and Cleveland? No one walked to the show. Not one person there walked to that show because there was no hotels. So every single person had to be in an Uber or a car. Whereas in Chicago, you know, I don't know about y'all, my hotel and many of the hotels, you just walk out the door or walk across the skywalk and you're in. So you don't have any parking. Well, I didn't have any parking issues, you know. For that reason, Chicago is a superior venue. That being said, I had an overwhelmingly positive experience at the National overall.
Chicago, you could just kind of, for people that haven't been before, and I know a lot, because a lot of my listeners are new or they've never been to National before, Brian. You can just walk in, basically. You know, it's the thing about Cleveland is, and we had a car, so we were lucky. You needed a car, basically. If you're using Uber, and here's another thing I want to bring up. The drop-off. There was a one-point drop-off. On Thursday, I left the show at about 5:30 because I want to get out there before the show started or closed completely. Yeah. And the line was wrapped like almost halfway around the building for people waiting for shuttle pickup or Ubers or Lyft.
To leave.
I felt terrible for them. They were standing in the sun. Just the guy at the end of the line, I'm like, you're not leaving here for like another hour and a half, buddy. It's not happening. But hopefully they take care of that stuff. Got to be more drop-off points, easier pickups and things like that. Yeah. Because they know it's a venue that people are driving to. You cannot just, like you said, walk to this venue from wherever you're staying. Everyone's driving to this thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's Chicago. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, the next thing.
Yeah, this is water under the bridge. Yeah, you won't have this issue in Chicago. You may have other issues like air conditioning.
There you go.
Have this issue, you know.
So that's the thing, though. Chicago last year, remember, air conditioning broke and it was terrible. Air conditioning to me was okay here, especially if you went to the breaker room. It seemed like it was kicking real well back there. Maybe it's, I don't know, the breakers got them to do it or whatever, or that's just where the area is supposed to be for good air, but it was better back there.
No doubt.
And okay, so let's get inside. We're inside now. We're finally inside, all right? We're cooled off. We're ready to see some cards. Yeah. What did you think about the layout?
I loved it. It was so simple a Cajun could figure it out. You know, it was like Atlantic City. Atlantic City was one big, like, rectangular type thing. This was basically two rectangle and a square with a wall in between. Simple. Like, you know, booth numbers this year for the first time in my experience at the National actually made sense. The banners were up there. If you told me table 3406, I could figure it out. You know, this is the first time ever that I've been able to figure it out. So I love the layout. Now, I'll say this. I had heard they chopped about 30% of the tables. Like, they chopped 30 out. So this was a much smaller National than even Atlantic City and much smaller than Chicago. That's what I was told. And I kind of felt that way. I felt like the venue and the number of tables was more condensed. You know, the aisle space for me was a little bit of an issue. I found myself trying to tiptoe and look over people to look at cards that I really wanted to see, especially at the booths that mattered to me. But I mean, I thought the layout was great other than bathrooms and food, you know.
Yeah, the layout, I appreciated the layout too. I like to I'm looking at so many cards, Brian, and I'm trying to do something stupid. Maybe I'm trying to look at every single booth at every single table, so I snake it up and down as best I can. You get distracted, you turn around like, where am I now real quick? But the fact that it's like rectangular or square made it much easier for me. Chicago was massive. Like, I was completely lost. I didn't know where
confusing
I was
too.
If I lost a card or a table, I wasn't gonna find it again for like another, you know, 30 minutes if at all. But this one I was able to actually go back easier. But the layout, was much better. I just felt like, yeah, when you talk about the booth numbers, that actually I understood as well. Which Chicago, I was like, don't even tell me your booth number. I'm not going
to
find it.
You better walk me to the booth. Like, tell me where it is. Don't just tell me. Just bring me there. Like, I needed a guide dog just to get to the dang booth. I mean, maybe I'm stupid, but Chicago was confusing as hell to me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, like I said, I'm walking in there and I'm seeing like, oh, you mentioned Chicago and how big it was. This was definitely a smaller show. There's no doubt about it. I didn't mind that, but you could tell for sure. It was a less dealers, less booths. I guess more intimate for a national, if you want to say that, but it's still a humongous show.
Yeah. I saw less soccer. I saw, now they had that soccer expo thing going on. I don't know if you knew about that, which I heard was an uproarious, outrageous success. Like, well-run, perfect, seamless, efficient. I heard it went great. I didn't get a chance to go there because I had no money left. I really wanted to go there because I have a lot of soccer collector friends as well, and I've started to dabble in that. I didn't get a chance to go there because of logistics, and I had no money left after the first day, which I'm sure we'll
– we're going to get to that then. We're going to get to left. All right.
I didn't see a lot of hockey. I didn't see a lot of soccer. And maybe it's just me. I felt like I saw less vintage. But again, I'm skipping vintage. I don't collect vintage. It's just not what I collect. So if I see Pokemon, I keep walking. If I see football, I keep walking. If I see vintage anything, I keep walking. So I'm a little different than most. I know you and most collectors, they want to see it all, and they collect, you know, from different, you know, different segments and sectors of the hobby. I'm pretty much tunnel vision. I'm looking for certain soccer, a very small type of soccer card, and then, you know, 90s basketball cards is really all I'm looking at. So I'm a little different.
Well, you know, when we spoke before on the podcast, you stay in your lane, which actually is a good thing. I think it's great advice, to be honest with you, instead of driving all over the place, not knowing where you're going. And that's kind of what I do. I pretty much hyper focus on 90s basketball, Michael Jordan cards, but I like to look at everything, which gets me in trouble. I have some vintage here, some ultra modern, but mostly my stuff is 90s basketball, like you and Jordan stuff. But the way you do it is good, because, and I do this sometimes too, is you look at a table from afar, you can tell, all right, I'm not, probably not going to be interested in that. And I keep moving, right? You keep moving at least. My problem is, I'm like, well, everyone's got Jordan cards. So there might be that one Jordan card in the corner that I want, or that's under, you know, that no one knows about because no one wants to stop like you. You're like, oh, this guy's got stuff I don't want or whatever. But everyone's got Jordan cards. And I have an issue with looking at everyone's Jordan card to make sure, hey, is this a PMG he doesn't know about or something? Or, you know, is this a numbered card that he's, you know, that I haven't seen before?
Yeah.
So I have that problem.
Yeah.
I'm stopping too much, Brian. I'm stopping too much. So the first day, Wednesday, I only made it through half the one side. I needed the breaker side. So you speak of vintage and all that stuff. There seems to be a little bit of a battle going on right now between the older collector and the younger collector. And I want to get your opinion on this. So there's a lot of dealers that are and vendors that are grandfathered in, that have been here before the pandemic boom and been here before the hobby is going so great and all that stuff. So they're having tables and booths, as they, in my opinion, should, because they were here before everything was great. But the issue that people have is a couple issues. One, they think that the younger collectors saying this is they're basically having a museum. They're not selling anything. They're not on comps, you know, if you want to use comps. They're not priced competitively. And they think they're wasting up space where other people could be using that. But I think that just adds more ultra modern into the floor. I like seeing all the different eras of cards. How do you feel about that, Brian?
Well, and as it pertains to your old school, probably older gentlemen, even older than me, that have been doing this for a decade, two decades, they have a saying in South Louisiana, first to the table eats. Those guys were here first. Those guys are there. You can price your cards however you want if you buy your booth. So that's certainly their prerogative. I don't know why they keep doing it if they're not selling cards. And I don't know why they don't use comps, because that's the only way you're going to move inventory. But that's certainly their prerogative, because they earned that right by A, you respect your elders, and B, they were here first, right? So they planted their flag. That's their deal. You know, I personally, you know, there is a rift in the hobby between the new – kind of, you know, back in the old America, they used to say new money and old money, right? You know, it's like new money and old money, and they don't necessarily see eye to eye. And, you know, in the hobby, we have a lot of rifts like that. We have collector versus investor, right? That was the talk of, you know, the 2020 to 2022 period. And then we have vintage versus ultra modern. We have those who love breaking with those who hate everything that has anything to do with breaking, right? So there's a lot of rifts like that in the hobby in different segments that are diametrically opposed. But I'll be honest with you, Kang, I think the hobby wants and needs all of that. I don't collect Pokemon. I could care less. I couldn't identify a Pokemon card to save my life, but I love the fact that it exists. I love the fact that it's part of the hobby, and I love the fact that, you know, we're sharing hotels and shuttles and a showroom floor with people who collect Pokemon or hockey or Magic the Gathering or V-Friends or whatever you collect. So I don't necessarily have an interest in very many different segments of the hobby, but I certainly respect all the other people because they, the feelings that I have about Michael Jordan cards in the 90s, they have the exact same feeling about their cards. And so it's, you know, it's keep an open mind. It's to be respected. And I like that the hobby is comprised of that many different people from different segments, different ages. It's all part of it, man. We got to have it.
I actually agree, you know, and it's one of the reasons I put you on here. No, just kidding. I'm like, we have the same perspective on the collecting.
Yeah.
One, a couple of things that you talked about there I want to touch on. One is pricing your cards. I never get crazy upset at someone who's overpriced because I'm like you. I'm like, well, he could price his card for whatever he wants. It's his card. He may never sell that card because of how he priced it, but that's his prerogative, I guess. If he doesn't want to sell it, trust me, he's not going to sell it because it's overpriced. I don't even bother negotiating or asking half the time if I see a card way over comps, you know, or way over what I'm willing to spend for it. But I think you do have to allow the people to price their cards where they want to, because how do cards go up then? If someone isn't at some point willing to overpay the last comp, right? I mean, how do cards gain value? You look at comps all the time. I know you're on Card Ladder and you see all this. When you see a card is running or a card has got paid for, that's how a card goes up.
That's
right?
The only way it goes up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, here's the deal. This is my intro line. If I see a card, you know, it might be a Jordan, it might be a Sean Kemp card. Who cares? It could be anything. If I see a card that's worth $1,000 and the guy's got it priced for $2,500, the line that I use without being rude, without being derogatory is, would you be willing to do something closer to comps? Right?
Right.
So you're insinuating somewhat politely, uh-huh. but quite forcefully, the card's overpriced, but you're not saying, man, why you have a card priced 2.5x of what it's worth. Yeah. So I kind of leave it as an open-ended question. Would you be willing to do something closer to comps? And then usually the response is, well, what are comps? Because believe it or not, you would be shocked at how many people don't really understand that, right? Even dealers, like they, or either that, or they just have no interest in selling the card and they can always answer, no, I would not be willing to do anything closer to comps. In which case, that's fine. You know, you asked your question, you got your answer, you just move along. Same thing on eBay. It's just eBay in person. You know, you see these cards on eBay, it's like 5X what it's worth. And you're like, damn, I want that card. I can't even make an offer. It's so overpriced. I'm not even going to start this conversation. I'm not going to direct message the seller. I'm not going to try to get anything done. It's just too far away. So dealers lose business that way. If you could, even if you want to price aggressively, you price it 25% over comps, you will get interested people to try to make a deal work. But if you price it 2.5, 3x comps, you will not get a deal done.
Yeah. And you move along. That's it. I don't waste my time bitching about it. Like I think a lot of people, the problem is I think some people expect you to, well, this is the comp, so this is what you're selling it for. No, I think we still got to realize these belong to somebody. These belong, you can let them go for whatever you want to, you know, just because you're willing to move things quote unquote under comps doesn't mean everybody else is. And I think they expect like, well, that's the price tag then. No, this is still an open market. They can price it for whatever they want. And I can tell. I usually try to be polite as possible too. If I really want a car to see where they're at, but I don't expect anyone to honor some kind of comp. You know what I mean? Sure. Like I'm not entitled to that. And I feel like the problem there is I think a lot of these new collectors or younger collectors are like, they're entitled to these comps. And that's just not the case.
It's not the case.
So, I mean, you picked up cards. I picked up cards because we were probably happy with, you know, hey, we're willing to pay this price on this card. So I think that's part of the fun, to be honest with you, Brian, is going out and hunt, not just finding the card, but making the deal. You know, like you also now got to make a deal. When you found the card, let's see if you can work out a deal with the dealer or the vendor. I had a good buying day Wednesday because my advice to people is if you like a card, don't wait and try to go back. You know, just make a deal there and then. All right. Because there's no guarantee that card's going to be there. And sometimes you can't even find the card again. You know, that happened to be for a smaller, like a baby Jordan, but that's okay. It was a baby Jordan.
What was it?
It was a Foundations Finest.
That firm Foundation. Yeah.
Oh, I got a great story for you, actually.
Okay.
So we were going to meet up, say hi, all that stuff. But I'm so hyper focused on cards. I want to see every card, every table. I didn't even like bother, you know, calling or texting. If I ran to people I knew, I would say hi.
Phone wouldn't have worked anyway, Kang. It doesn't matter. You could have sent me a message. I wouldn't have seen it until Saturday, you know.
So, but a couple of my buddies, I told you we split up when we got to the show. And later on that night, they go, "Hey, we saw Cajun." And I'm like, "Oh, sweet. All right." You know, because they, you know, they see you on the YouTube and all that stuff. And they're like, "Yeah, he was right next to us and he picked up a Jordan card." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool." You know, and then he goes, "Yeah," but he put it back down or whatever. And then we moved on. The next day, I bought a baby, real small Jordan. I come back and they're like, "All right, what'd you get?" I'm like, "Yeah, I showed him my cards." I'm like, "That's the Jordan that Cajun picked up." And I'm like, "Get out of here."
What was it?
I'm going to show you. No one can see right now, but I'm going to just, it's profiles, Jordan. I don't know. Did you pick this up?
I picked that very card up and I looked at it and I was like, I need this to grade, you know, I need it to grade a certain thing. And I was like, I don't know. I can't remember why I put it back down.
Oh, maybe I can see why. It's a little white and there's one of these corners.
Corners. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did. I picked up the same damn card.
That's unbelievable, man. Well, here it is.
So I've got the Profiles 3, right? The serial number, you know, the big one, but I don't have that one. You know, I've got the Profiles 3. I think I've got the Profiles 2 and a PSA 10, but I don't have the baby.
So that's funny. I got the baby and the 2. I don't have the 3, the big one like you have. I'd love that. Yeah, that's a big card. I'll hope to get that. I did pick up a die cut, and I want to show you, but not that die cut. Yeah. I got the 1 and 2. You got the 2 and 3. But yeah, they said I brought this back to go, "What table was that?" And they're like, "That's the exact card you picked."
They weren't lying. I picked that very card up. I said, "Can I look at that?" And I looked at the back of it. I was like, so it's going to get an 8. Are you going to grade it? It's going to get an 8. You
know? Yeah, it's probably going to get an 8. We'll see. I might just leave it raw. I just need to pick up the 3 now. But yeah, that's pretty funny. That's hilarious. So what you did make some big purchases though. Day one, you teased it on social media, which was great. You said, I spent all my money on day one. I have no money left. And I picked up 2 tier one, Jordan cards. And the tier one hierarchy, if you don't know, is the Cajun Cardboard, Michael Jordan hierarchy poster. He's got all these Jordans on there. He ranks them in tiers and you picked up 2 tier ones, which means they're pretty big Jordans. What'd you pick up?
Big Jordans. So I don't know how familiar your audience is with, you know, the hierarchy project or whatever, but these are by anybody's standards, top, let's just say top 35, top 40 Jordan cards in the world for sure. And I ran across at a table. I first saw one. And so there's 7 legacy collections in existence. Okay. And so they're from 96 and 97 Flair Showcase. And I have a few already, but I still needed 3. And so I just happened to catch a BGS 7.5 1996 row 1. Row 2 that I needed. And so I was like, man, it's not priced bad. I'll be honest with you. Don't tell the dealer. I'd have bought it for what he had it priced at. Okay. But I was like, you know what? Let's try to shave a little meat off the bone here. Yeah. Let's see what we can do. I had a Kobe Bryant Flair Showcase class of 96, the real white one, kind of opaque looking cool card. PSA 10 that I graded myself. It came back PSA 10. It's about a $2,200 card. So I ended up getting a deal done for that for about 70. It ended up being for like 70, you know, right at 7,500, 7,700, something like that. So that was the first big pickup. And I was excited because I was like, I picked up a tier one Jordan. And I didn't have a huge budget. I had 3 cards to trade. The Kobe was the biggest. And then I had about 11 grand. That's it. That's for the whole show, right? I came in, I got 11 grand. I got these 3 cards to trade. That's all I got to work with. And I was like, well, I just spent a lot of my, you know, budget here. Yeah. I am not exaggerating with you. I walked another 12 feet. And I saw 90s auctions, Josh, Midwest Vintage Cards, Chicago Sports Cards, Jim. They run the 90sauctions.com, the auction house. Very good friends of mine. Both those guys are from Chicago. They share a booth with Naz, who I'm sure you know if you collect Jordans. So I see Naz, and of course, he's loud as hell. He's the only person in the hobby louder than me. And so he's, you know, screaming. He's like, "What'd you get?" I was like, "Here, I picked this up." He's like, "You're not going to believe this. I just sold the 96 Row 1 Legacy Collection on the shuttle bus on the way here." And I was like, "I need the 96 row one." I was like, "Who did you sell it to?" And he's like, he's standing right there. And so it was Nitin Patel, who's also a big Jordan collector. Yep. He's got great cards. He was literally standing one table over. He's like, "Go ask him if he'll sell it to you." And so I knew what he paid for it, right? Because Naz told me what he sold it for. So I walk up to Mr. Patel, we'll call him. And I was like, "Look," I was like, "you don't know this yet, but you're going to sell me that 96 row one legacy collection." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "The one you just bought from Naz." I was like, "I know what you paid for it. Let me pay you $300 more. Let me give you $300 and it'll be the greatest, you know,
the quickest, easiest money, right?"
Yeah. He's thinking, he's like, "You're crazy." And I was like, you know, I need to do this. I need to get this deal done. I was like, I just picked up the row two. I need the row one. It was a PSA 7 too. So not a huge card, but and so we got a deal done for that too as well. So I got two deals done for two tier one Jordan cards, like 20 feet apart, about 15 minutes apart, and I spent my whole budget. That was all I had left. Actually, I had a little bit of money left, and I ended up picking up another Jordan for about $800, another Rubies Jordan, but it was a smaller subset Rubies, the Point Man from Skybox Premium, Point Man Rubies.
Was it graded?
It was graded, PSA 8, but it wasn't serial numbered. So I picked that up for, I think Justin at 610 Sports Cards. Did you see his booth?
Oh, yeah. I bought something from him.
Dude, you had to. Who didn't, right? If you collect Jordan and you didn't see that booth, shame on you. You missed the highlight of Cleveland. So I picked that up for, I think he had it listed for $900 and I bought it for $800. I think that's right.
That's crazy because I traded appointment Rubies for a card I picked up as well.
Did you?
It was raw though. So,
okay. Well, this was a PSA 8. So, yeah.
I was like, when you mentioned that, I was like, oh my God, did he take my card? You know, like,
yeah. No, wouldn't that be funny if I picked up the card you bought and then I bought the card you sold? No, but that was it. And so that was the end of the buying for me at the show. After that, it was just doing content, recording people, interviewing people, talking. I'm trying to monetize my YouTube channel and I'm terrible at asking people for money.
Yeah.
So I had a checklist of places that I wanted to go meet with the CEO and or the, you know, people in charge of the purse strings and say, hey, look, let me go, you know, sponsor my channel, make an affiliate partner. Let me try to sell your product, you know? So that's
sounds like a job for Cajun Jr., man. Like he's got to get up on it. No.
Yeah. It sounds like a job for Cajun Jr. I don't think he's going to have quite the skills of persuasion yet, nor the know-how in the hobby to do that. But he's more about getting reels and shorts up right now. So we're going to let him take baby steps.
So, yeah, I mean, but you know what? You blew, quote unquote, blew all your money in the day one, but you got the cards you wanted, man. You got to be happy about that. And that's important, people. When you go to a card show, I don't care if it's a local card show or the national. You see a card and it's definitely fairly priced, and you got the means, do it. Because I think regret and FOMO and all that stuff is really going to creep in. It did for me. I actually had my biggest pickup after I left the show because I couldn't stop thinking about, like, should I have pulled the trigger on that card? And I got a deal done with 610, actually, on Instagram. I had left the show. So Thursday, I was where Wednesday, Thursday. I didn't buy much Thursday. You know, it was just... I went to his booth. A lot of booths had bullet holes in them. I'm going to be honest with you. By Thursday, it was pretty amazing that these guys were selling so many cards. They're still trying to buy them from people to put them back out in the showcase. But a lot of people had a lot of missing cards in their showcase. I looked at, he had Justin, is that his name? Justin at 610 or whatever. He had amazing cards, Jordan cards. But they were missing bullet holes. I thought to myself, what did I miss Wednesday when people came here? You know, I didn't see the rubies, so you must have got there before me.
Yeah.
But he had a bunch of great stuff. I end up, I was looking at 97 premium competitive advantage he had. Okay. So I did
BGS
not.
BGS graded. Trigger.
Huh?
BGS graded.
PSA 9. PSA 9.
PSA 9. Okay. I think he might have had a BGS graded. Not BGS.
He probably did. He had so much.
He had a lot.
Yeah.
He had a lot.
Yeah. So I didn't pull the trigger. He was fairly priced, but I was trying to work on something else. I ended up leaving the show, not picking up anything else. So I felt like that regret of not grabbing another one, you know, before I left. So I actually messaged him, asked him, hey, you still got that card? You know, this is before the show starts on Friday. I want to get it in before people get in. He's like, yeah, I got it. We negotiate a little bit, come to a fair deal. He goes, I'll pull it. I got you. I luckily have a bunch of friends that were dealers there. Had him go over, pay for me, and I would pay him back. They picked up the card for me, and they brought it back to Michigan. I didn't have the card in me until, I think, Monday or Tuesday after, but I picked it up, and now I have the card in hand. So then I did a YouTube. Follow me on YouTube, Kane Collects, K-H-A-N-G, Collects. Brian, that's for you to see right there. You know what it looks like already. Just a sweet die cut.
Big time. I'm looking it up right now. I want to see what you paid for that thing.
Oh, God. So 97 Skybox Premium has a ton of great inserts on it. Golden Touch.
Would you tell the people what you paid for it?
Silky Smooth. Hey, you know, I feel good about my purchase, Brian. Let's put it that way. All right. So
I got the comps pulled up. I was just going to double check you. Make sure you're staying in your lane. You know, don't let Justin take advantage of you.
No, I run nines. You know, I do nines. So
yeah. Well, look, I'm going to Nine's the best buy in the Jordan market right now. Period. End of story. I'll fight anybody who says otherwise. Right now, PSA 10s have run. The premium is too great. It's too great of a premium from a 9 to a 10. PSA 9s are the best bang for your buck in 90s Jordan stuff. I should never say that publicly because it's going to win. The window's going to close on those just like on 10s. But it is.
And they're kind of running now, too. You know, I don't know the influence of maybe you saying it or you know, other people, too. But I think they're kind of running a little bit.
It's where else are you going to go? I mean, if the 10 is 7X, the 9, buy the 9. I mean, it's just common sense. You know, I mean, unless you've got unlimited money and you don't care about comps.
Yeah.
I mean, you move to the next one. You buy BGS 9.5 or you buy 9s. I mean, those are your options, you know.
Yeah. So you were there longer than me. Friday and Saturday, how was the show then? How was the crowds? How was getting in? How was all that stuff?
So I left Saturday morning because I had a 16-hour drive. But I was there quite a bit. I was there at the show longer on Friday than any other day. And I would, you know, I don't know if you got around to see every single table. I am not exaggerating. I probably saw...
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
45% of the tables. I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but I didn't have any money left. And it was like, I'm out here sightseeing, you know, it's like, what am I going to do? See a card. I love it. I'm in love. I can't buy it. That sucks. It's better than never seeing the card at all. You know what I mean? So I wish I'd have seen more. I will say this. It was really fun to get around and talk to all of the people that we communicate with regularly on Instagram and on my YouTube channel. I am not exaggerating. I bet somewhere between 100 and 150 people stop me, and I got a chance to shake hands, take pictures, talk to them, interview them, to put it on the channel. I got some video montages coming up from the national. I did 4 national videos on my channel, which really didn't take a lot of time. It was just video and photo dumps. So to be able to meet all the folks that I've messaged with or respond to as far as comments go on YouTube was awesome. It was absolutely fantastic. All over the world, Australians, West Coast, East Coast, you know, down south with me. It was really good to meet the people. So I got to really, truly enjoy the people of the hobby. And the highlights for me were the evening events that I went to more so even than the show. I had a lot of fun at the evening events.
So yeah, I mean, one of the good things about you blowing all your money on day one there, Brian, was you actually had more time to don't worry about the cars. I can talk to the people more. Right. And it's about the people for you.
That's it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Do you ever do, I mean, I know you said you didn't get to, you know, 45% of the show and all that stuff. Do you ever value box dig at all? Or is it, are you just
wanted to? I swore I was going to. I said I was going to do a little thing. I'm horrible at staying organized and doing like on the spot content, you know, like I'm not the guy. Like if I ran into you at the show, I'm going to shake hands with you and we're going to talk for 20 minutes. I'm not going to say, Kang, hold on. Let me hit the record button. All right, now let's talk. I can't do that. It's not me. It's just not how I do it. I know people love that kind of content. I'm not that person. So I swore that I was going to do like a $500 dollar box challenge where I was going to spend $500 in the dollar boxes at the show.
Yeah.
Record all of it, grade all of it, and then do a grade reveal and see, you know, where we were. And it's a great idea. It's gold, right? People would love that.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I just didn't have time to sit down and dig through the dollar boxes. And, you know, I got to put my reading glasses on because I'm old and look at the condition. I was like, you know what? It's just going to take forever. So I didn't. But I wanted to. I just didn't get a chance.
So the first day I got slowed down even more besides the traffic and everything because I actually got stuck at a 90s basketball dollar box. This guy had a bunch of 90s inserts there.
Where was it?
It was actually right to the front on the right by the PSA booth. You know, that PSA.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So I went through and I don't know if you appreciate that. I'm going to show you, but I'm going to tell the people.
Show me. Yeah. Let me quiz. You show me the cards. I'll try to guess what they are. Oh, 2 Arthur Agees and a William Gates.
Yep.
Arthur Agees are autographed. Is it Gates autographed?
Yep.
Holy crap, it is. Okay, now you've got to get those graded. Don't even numerically grade them. Just grade this authentic card autograph grade. That is an insane pairing. That would look so cool together, dude.
If you don't know people, Hoop Dreams was a movie, a documentary in 1994, early 90s, about Arthur Agee and William Gates, okay? Yep. And they actually played college ball, and it basically shows you how hard it is to make it to the NBA, you know? And they're tough road to even try to make it through college, let alone the NBA. Yep. And they had cards in Classics Rookies. I think it's 1994 Classics or 1995 yep. Classic. And I go through this dollar box, Brian, and I'm looking at 90s. These pop up. I actually found the AGs first. I'm like, I'm grabbing both of these. Now I got to go through the rest of the box looking for William Gates.
I can't believe they're autographed. Yes. Like, I bought a collection and I had the raw, you know, the little babies, but you got the autograph. That's really, really cool and nostalgic, man. That was a great documentary. If you're too young to remember or you weren't alive, go watch it. Hoop Dreams. Go watch Hoop Dreams. It's a great documentary.
Great documentary. One of my favorite basketball films of all time.
Yep.
You got the autographed card of William Gates and Arthur Agee here. Dollar each, Brian. Dollar each, man. You know, it's probably not even worth. I mean, I don't know. If anything's worth a little bit more than a dollar, it might be these guys.
Here's the deal. If they'd have had 20 each, I'd have spent $40. I'd have done what you did. That's a fact. You can bet that on. You can take that to the bank. I would have. I'd have bought all of them. I'd have graded all of them because there's somebody else out there who feels the way we feel about that movie.
Yeah.
You sell them together, sell them as a pair. It'd be awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Keep
one
and sell 19 pair. Yeah.
And that's why I do it, though. I got stuck at this booth for like 20 minutes. It was killing me in my 3 hours. But I'm like, I got to find the William Gates. You know, and I found and I ended up finding a bunch of other autographics that he had for super cheap, you know, because I know set builders. Yeah. They love that, you know, that stuff. So I did that. So, you know, I wish I could have done more of that, but time was so limited and the shows were so big. And you are meeting people, you know. I have a lot of friends that are there, you know, and dealers and, you know, vendors that I got, you know, I don't want to say got to, because I actually enjoy talking to them. They're great. Sure. They always help me out with things. I help them out. And it's just, that's part of the collecting world, which is awesome to people.
Yep. Yep.
So I can't wait for Chicago, man. You're going to be there, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 3 years in Chicago in a row is going to be awesome, man. So I'm going to try to get the same room, same hotel, same setup. I mean, Chicago was the most seamless, you know, event for me so far. I don't get out to a lot of card shows. I go to 1.5 a year is what I tell people.
Really? Right?
I don't count Baton Rouge shows. I go to about 1.5 card shows a year. Dallas, probably every other year, but I got to get better because it's 7 hours away. I can do that. And then every national. And so Chicago is a must see. And I'm going to bring a lot of people from Louisiana next year. We're going to have a group of guys that head up there next year that travel up there together that have been staying and putting it off. And they're like, all right, I'm going to Chicago next year. So I'll bring up a little Cajun crew up there.
Uh-oh, the Cajun crew. That sounds like another job for Cajun Jr.
Cajun Jr. will be an expert by then. He'll be a true brand manager by then.
All right, guys, follow him, man. Cajun_cardboard. Great content and card collecting. Even if you're not into Jordans or 90s, I mean, he does it all. YouTube, Instagram. Follow myself too on YouTube and Instagram. Kang Collects, Khang Collects. You guys know the drill. Appreciate everyone listening. Please tell a friend or family member if you enjoy the podcast. Always appreciate all the support. And now, as always, guys, keep collecting.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.